Marilyn Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Life Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2, for Autumn Semester 2019. Lecture 21, delivered on November 5th. Today, the cost of capital. Before we do that, of course, we'll have a quick look at the screens to see what's going on. Madam, is this a good day or a bad day on the street? Yes, you. Right.
It's a pretty good day.
Pretty good day?
All right.
Would you like to amend that? What do you think?
Good day.
Actually, it's an almost not even worth mentioning day. We have the S&P down a little bit, the Dow and the NASDAQ up a little bit. It's a mixed kind of a day for the street. There's nothing spectacular. If you'll notice, looking quickly at the S&P 500, you had a sharp spike a little after the bell, but then it just dropped off like a rock, and then it bounced back some, and now it's just kind of wobbling around trying to find some reason to be angry or happy, and it's not really getting anything done. However, we do have that the San Francisco Fed has said that there are going to be no more rate cuts. That's enough of that nonsense as far as the Fed is concerned, because we are risking, and we may already have gotten into an embedded expected inflation starting to hang on the market, because so many injections into the federal funds market by the Fed on the order of a couple trillion dollars is just, there's no way that that's not going to cause inflation. And the expectation of inflation may be part of why interest rates in the markets are trying to go up as the Fed is trying to push them down. So we are at sort of a standstill now for the time being, and the economy will have to find its own way to get through the next year or so. But as you can see, gold is down a little bit, and we have the 10-year bond up, interestingly, which would indicate that yields on the bonds have eased up a little bit today as buyers buy into the bond market. So it looks, at least for the time being, like there's very little money coming in or out on net from the equities, but we do see that there's money moving out of gold, and it seems to be going in, and silver too. And it seems to be moving toward the bond market, sort of a reverse of the second stage of a flight to quality. Whatever that means, it means. Now, on the final, I will give you a question. I'll show you a snapshot of the market as it's behaving, and then these screens here, and I will give you five different assessments, and you'll have to find the one that best describes what is happening in the markets. In other words, you might see equities going down, bonds going up, gold going down, something like that. And you'll have to assess which one of the analyses is accurate, or at least the best explanation of what is happening. Just as find out if you are able to work out the details of of what analysts are saying in the market itself. Now, for the lecture today, it's going to be one of those grinders, at least part of it is, where I turn formulas around. Look, remember that the cost of capital, the weighted average cost of capital, is the weight of debt in the portfolio times the after-tax cost of debt. Now, the tax rate, the statutory tax rate is indeed 21% right now, flat. However, in real application, it is still varying all over the place. But for the time being, we can use a tax rate for the given time of 21%, recognizing, first of all, that that's not actually what's going on in the effective tax rates, but more importantly, this is going to go away if we have a turnover in the White House and the Senate. This will shoot really way up. So this might be fun for a while for the corporations, but it won't be for long. And then the weight of debt plus times the after-tax cost of debt plus the weight of equity times the cost of equity. Now, there's no after-tax because the dividends are not tax-deductible, so there's no tax shield paying dividends, which is another one of those mysteries about why companies actually issue dividends anyway, if they're going to be taxed on them, and then the people who get them, their own shareholders, get taxed on them too, at least partly. However, it's a little more complicated than this because debt comes in different flavors. You know, there's on the debt side, there's short-term debt and there's long-term debt. And companies can issue a whole variety of different debt instruments, and they can carry different coupon rates. So even though I will simplify it in this class, there really are several different kinds of debt. So this would actually be a composite of several kinds. So they might have the weight of short-term debt might be 5%, and the weight of long-term debt might be 10%, and the cost of short-term debt might be, 5.6%, and the weight of long-term debt might be 4.8%, and the cost, not weight. And so, with a tax rate of 21%, we'll just go through it and say, okay, so the cost of debt overall would be 5%. 0.05 times 5.6% times 1 minus 0.21 plus 0.10 times 4.8% times 1 minus 0.21. So you add those together, and that would give you your overall cost, weight of debt would be the weight of debt would be 15% times these two, add those two up together. I won't make it that bit difficult in this class. We'll just say there's one kind of debt and all of that. However, the cost of debt, you could take two approaches. You could actually say, all right, the cost of debt is a coupon on it. Could we do that? Well, yeah, we could. Coupon on this debt is 5.6%. The problem is that might not be right. A better one might be the yield to maturity on the debt, which would be different from the coupon. Simply because interest rates go up and down, the coupon has been frozen since the debt started. More importantly, the coupon is a historical rate, what happened when this debt was issued. The yield to maturity is what it's going to cost if the company goes back out there and sells debt right now. I'll give you an example. NBV Corp ...4.5% 2032 is quoting at 98 75. So, by taking the cost of debt, we could say, well, the cost of debt is 4.5%. Well, 4.5%. Well, okay, that's fine, 4.5%. That's what it costs. However, that was what it cost at the time that they issued this. Now, this is 2032. If this is 30-year debt, they issued that back in 2002. If it's 20-year debt, they issued it in 2012. One way or the other, that's an old interest rate that made the bond investors, the lenders, happy then. What has gone on since then is that interest rates for risk like NBV long debt have moved. And we can certainly see that. All we'd have to do is run the numbers on it right here, real quick. Watch. You should be comfortable with this by now. And I'm just doing another one just to do it. Apps, Finance, TVM Solver. Now, we are now sitting, the term of this is 13 years now. 13 years times two periods per year. We don't know the yield. The price right now is -987.5, and the coupons are 4.5%, 0.045 times the face divided into two payments a year. And the face value of the debt is $1,000. Making sure that's on end, we can now go back up and get the yield to maturity. Take it back up to I% alpha solve. Now, don't forget, we did half years, so the yield's going to be a half-year yield. So we run the cursor over to the end of that I% we just got, and we times it by 2, and then move the cursor. So right now, and if the market says NBV Corp debt should have a coupon of 4.63%. It doesn't, and therefore, investors sell it down off par, down to a discount. So right now, the yield to maturity is 4.63%. So which is right? The yield to maturity is the right one to use, not the coupon. Now, you'll have somewhere in the problems where you'll use the coupon, but then they'll get you to the real thing where if NBV were to borrow more money now on long debt, it is going to cost, the coupon on it is going to have to be 4.63% if they want to get $1,000 per bond they issue. And they try their best. Believe me, you might have already encountered, I don't know, in accounting where you issue debt, but the coupon isn't right. And so you end up not getting $1,000 per bond. You end up getting something other than $1,000. So recognizing that on your balance sheet is a real hoot. Because say that NBV says, oh, whatever, we're going to issue a 4.5%. We're going to issue $100 million at 4.5%. Well, the market said you were supposed to issue that debt at a higher rate. Now things have changed. So they're going to give the company only $98,750,000. And how do you recognize that on the books is a rather interesting situation, because it was supposed to be $100,000 on the books, but it won't be. That's not my problem. That's accounting's problem. That's why they make the big bucks. So anyway, right here, use the yield of maturity if you ever have to do this. But like I said, sometimes you just say, oh, well, here's the coupon. I don't know what the current price is, so I'm just going to use the coupon. So, a good example of that would be a company like, let's say, JCPenney, which issued its debt long ago with coupons that were nice, modest. But now that JCPenney's gotten into trouble, their bonds, those old bonds, sell at heavy discounts to par, which means that their actual cost of debt capital is a lot higher than the coupons on those bonds. And that, of course, makes their problems even worse because their cost of capital overall is higher than it was in the past. And if they want to go out and borrow more money to try to keep going, they're going to be paying those higher yield to maturities that are there now on their debt. Okay. Anyway, so taking that aside, well, we see that I'm emphasizing debt is actually simple on its surface. It gets a little busier when you get down to the brass tacks of it. Remember that the after-tax cost of debt, just get this in your notes one more time, is the before-cost tax of debt times 1 minus the tax rate. That will be an interesting thing, too, because where we are now with the tax rate on corporate profits being so low, we have our generating trillion-dollar budget deficits because corporations are just not paying much in taxes these days. And so the problem is that when we correct that and bring the corporate tax rates back up more in line with historical numbers, it's going to be a big jump in it's going to be a big change in the weighted average cost of capital. Notice, interestingly enough, though, that when the tax rate goes back up, let's say to 40%, which it would do probably about 2021, if we have a new president and a new Senate, that's going to cause the after-tax cost of debt to actually fall, which will mean that corporations will begin to tilt their capital structures back toward debt, more debt and less equity, because a higher tax rate will encourage corporations to go use debt because the after-tax cost of debt will go down substantially. Anyway, enough of that. Okay, that's that piece right there. Weight of equity. There are three flavors of equity. There are four. Let me do this. The two broad types of equity . There is the internally generated equity. In other words, what the corporation makes for its shareholders from its operations. It's operating equity. We sell stuff, we pay our bills, and what remains belongs to the shareholders. We can either give it to them as dividends or we can plow it back into the company on their behalf. But what we make at the bottom line belongs to the shareholders. Therefore, it is a cost to us. Our shareholders' profit is not a great thing to the extent that it looks like it in accounting, because we owe it to the shareholders. The corporation has to pay them what we make. That profit is theirs. Dividends or plowback, it belongs to them, so it has a cost. So we would call this R sub S, the cost of existing common stock shareholders. Well, actually, no. Okay. I have to stop this. Now, the other one is externally generated equity. This is the cost of getting new shareholders. This is the cost of getting new shareholders. It is higher than the cost of your existing shareholders. I've been criticized for giving this example, but let's see. Sir, are you married? You're not. You look like a... Yeah. Okay. Don't look fearful. It happens. It's inevitable, bruh. You know? So when you have a relationship going on, you know, it's McDonald's or mac and cheese, or if you want to splurge, maybe Denny's. Okay? However, are you going to do that when you are trying to develop a relationship? Hell no. You're going to go to Biagi's. You're going to go to Tony Roma's. You're going to go to a steakhouse. And even if you fix food at home, you're not going to buy the house brand. You're going to buy the original Kraft mac and cheese, okay? Not the Hy-Vee brand. You see, it's going to cost you more to bring those new people in. So externally generated equity is actually the most expensive kind of equity you can have out there. So we would call this R sub N. The cost of new shareholders. The problem is that on this side, there are two kinds of stock. There's common stock, and there's preferred stock. And this turns into a maze here. Just real fast, this tree blows up on you. So there's a cost to your common stockholders, and there is a cost to your preferred stockholders. Over here, there would be a cost of new common stockholders, and there would be a cost of new preferred stockholders. Now, even technically over here, with debt, there's a cost of your existing debt, and then there's a cost of getting new lenders in. But that gets to the point where when I get too much into this, which I will actually in about 3 hours in 3:41, that's when I decide whether I want to go to class or just kill myself. Because, I mean, seriously, the tree just explodes here. It gets to be confusing. Fortunately, there are a few simplifications along the line. Look, what makes new investors, equity or debt, more costly, is you have to pay to get them. There's what we call a flotation cost. The cost of the flotation cost. The flotation cost is the cost of actually bringing in the new investors. And that can be fairly significant. Now, there are rules on how much, though, you see, you can either try to sell the stock yourself as a company, a self-underwriting, a Western-style underwriting, as we call it, or you can go find an investment banker that will do it. Okay, if you do it yourself, and I speak from painful experience trying to do this, these self-underwritings with companies long ago. You're spending hours and hours just cold calling people, friends of friends, relatives, friends of relatives, trying to sell that stock you've got to raise your money. The opportunity cost is staggering. And then there's the other part of it. The risk involved, because if you don't do it exactly right, you're going to have some regulator, I guarantee you, find you and try to send you to prison or fine you a massive amount of money trying to do it yourself. I told you a story quite a while back in this class of that beer company
They did a self-underwriting. It was an exemption from all the regulations. You could raise up to a certain amount of money on your own using, instead of a fancy massive prospectus, you could use a thinner offering circular. And this company put their offering circulars in their six packs of bottled beer, and they sold the offering out. It was a hit. They sold probably three times as much as they were allowed to, which meant that the SEC stepped in and smacked their asses, made them give back every penny, made them pay a big fine, and then told them they couldn't try again for a couple of years. So doing it yourself turned out to be more expensive than if they'd gone to the Wall Street boys to do it. Okay, well, let's go to the Wall Street boys to do it. Well, they're going to charge you some amount out of every dollar they raise for you, usually a flat fee. They're probably also going to find all kinds of other ways to soak you. They're going to make you pay fees that they have, consulting fees, advising fees, all that kind of stuff. They'll find even other ways to milk money out of your offering. So you try to raise $40 million, well, you might not see $36 million of it, $38 million of it. You might see only $36, $38 million because they're going to milk it. That's a flotation cost, which turns the whole cost of your equity higher for the new issue. I mentioned to you a story in my own business where I was with Rainmakers, and the Rainmakers could raise someone needed $10 million, okay, we're going to raise, sell $15 million of stock, and we're going to keep $5 million of it. Ouch! That means that he's getting the cost of $15 million, but he has the benefit of only $10 million. So these private equity jockeys, as we are called, or as we I was called, we'll take you to the cleaners. You can't raise it on your own. No Wall Street firm is going to touch you. Well, we can help you out for a fee. And these guys are out there, all Lambert, Romney, you name it. These predators are out there. And you're probably going to end up going out of business because your cost of capital, you don't feel it at first. You're just thanking God you've got $10 million. But then as time goes on, that theoretical thing, the weighted average cost of capital, begins to slowly eat into your flesh and then down to your organs, and you finally die, as Sears did and many, many other companies who go with the private equity investors and their insane flotation costs at the end of the day. It's the finance equivalent of crack. You feel so good at first, and then you feel bad, and they'll come back and they'll provide you with more of it. You want some more capital? You need another $5 million? Well, we'll raise $8 million for you and keep $3 million. Yes, please, we want to keep going. And by the time it's over, they have destroyed your company. They already sold out the stock you gave them for their, as part of their fees, when they pumped it up. And now they own the debt. And then when you go bankrupt, they're just going to take over your company, liquidate it, and sell the body parts to other friends of theirs. So flotation costs, you're going to have a hard time getting away from them, no matter how you play it. An interesting part, though, is this. The flotation cost on debt is actually surprisingly small. I mean, it's so easy to market debt. The investment bankers don't charge much for it. Compared to a stock offering, a debt offering, maybe 1%, 2%. Whereas in a stock offering, oh, I'd put it at 8%, and I'd criticize, well, it's not supposed to be that high. Well, yeah, it is. You know, once you count in all the other, the fees and the consulting agreements. But then, of course, there's the other one, not of course, preferred stock historically has had very low flotation costs because preferred stock was, again, really easy to unload in an offering. There are these
funds that just love preferred stock, at least historically. Fixed income funds love preferred stock. Insurance companies used to like to have it on their books, preferred stock, because it just kind of pays a dividend forever and ever. It really doesn't fluctuate. And even if the company gets in some trouble, it gets a dividend before the common stockholders do. You still have to pay the debt holders first, though. Going on with this, anyway, I've ranted enough about that. But the flotation costs are what kills makes new equity more expensive than existing equity. And technically, I mean, over here, the cost of debt, I mean, you really should include a new and an existing part. We don't, because historically it's been such a low flotation cost, we just say debt is debt. Whether it's existing or it's new debt, that float cost really isn't going to affect it all that much. And I would love to ignore it, but unfortunately, as I mentioned in 341, I do have to include it, and it gets to be a pain in the butt because you have to take the float cost out of the coupon along the way every month, every half year. But anyway, that's 2.5 hours from now. So I'm going to enjoy what's left of my life before I have to do the harsh thing to myself. Okay, getting down to the basics. Okay. Cost of debt. That one's easy. R sub D, A, T is nothing but the cost of debt times 1 minus the tax rate. And the cost of debt is yield to maturity. Unless that's not given to you, then you just use the coupon. But if they tell you a current price for the debt, then you have to crank it on your calculator, just go in there, hammer out the yield to maturity. That's all you do. Not hard at all. This one, cost of equity. I'll start with common stock. Existing. Two ways to do it. You can use the constant growth dividend model, rearrange it, and get the cost of equity out of there. Or you can do what you're supposed to and use the capital asset pricing model. That's how you're supposed to do it. But sometimes you just get kind of desperate and you do it the difficult way. Look. You remember that price is D1 over R minus G, the price of equity right now, or let me put it this way, the price of common equity. That CE there is common equity. Okay, it's the cost of equity, common equity, minus G. Now I snuck in there the sub CE because this is for common equity, which is what gets dividends. And remember that would be rewriting that a little bit more completely. P0 of common equity, the price of common equity right now should be the current dividend times 1 plus the growth of that rate of that dividend divided by the cost of common equity minus the growth rate. That's how it works, okay? Now, if I rearrange that stupid formula, I can actually tease out the cost of common equity. Should I do that? Yeah, just to irritate myself. Cross-multiplying R sub CE minus G would equal D0 over P, the current price of common equity, times 1 plus G. So R sub CE is going to be D0 over the price of common equity right now, price of stock, distributing that times 1 plus D0 over price 0 of common equity times the growth rate, and then adding the growth rate here. And then rearranging that son of a bitch. yeah, about that. The hell with it. I'm just going to write it. The cost of common equity is going to be the dividend right now over the price of the stock plus G. That's what it comes out to be. Yes, yes. Well, that one right there. Yeah, that's why I put it in the square. I didn't do that for my health. I could have used a triangle. I could have used a 5-point star, except then I would have been accused of promoting Satan worship if it was upside down. If it was right side up, I'd just be accused of being a Wiccan. Current common stock, the cost of common stock. And that's existing common equity. I have to do a quick, and I'm sure as heck not going to go through it. Look, if you go to an investment banker and say, I need to raise more money by selling common stock, the investment banker is going to do it in some kind of way that is a percent of the price it sells. In other words, we're going to sell your stock at $50 a share, and what we will do is take 6% of that for ourselves. For each share at $50, we're going to take 6% or 8% of that $50 and keep it for ourselves, which means that the price sub zero for new equity, new common equity, is going to simply be for the new equity. Well, let me write this one down. Cost of existing is R sub common equity existing is going to be D0. I can't write today. D0, the dividend that's currently being paid, over P0, the price right now, plus the growth rate of the dividends. Now, the cost of new common equity would simply be R sub CE common equity new, as opposed to next. New, as opposed to existing, is going to be D0 over the price minus the float. Well, however many dollars out of every dollar of stock, out of what you sell the stock for, plus G. If that's a percent, you can just take, okay, the float is 6%. Okay, so we just take the price times 0.94 to represent what the company actually gets. I'll do a problem here real quick in a minute. Well, let me point out something here. This came up surprisingly often when I was a consultant, and I've found out through the years that many people involved in the rainmaking business at either really fancy or low lives like I was, there's this thing that sometimes happens in a board meeting. I would comment, the price of the stock has fallen quite a bit over the past 3 months. And I get back this response, well, so what? You know, we're not going to sell any more stock. Who cares if the price of the
stock has fallen. Aside from the fact that you're going to have a whole lot of really bitchy shareholders at your next annual meeting, who cares what the price does after we've raised the money? Well, actually, if you look at this, they should, because as the price of the stock goes down, the cost of equity goes up. So in other words, even though they don't feel the pain, it's just an annoyance to them when the shareholders get mad. It really is damaging the company in a slow, corrosive way because their cost of capital is going up. It's a hidden thing. It's like that flotation cost thing. It's not something that hits you right away, but over a period of time, as your cost of capital goes up, it just eats at the company's ability to function. And also notice that that float, that can be a really nasty thing. If that float is very high, let's say your float is 12% on $50. That means that you don't raise $50 per share you sell. You raise only $44 per share that you sell. But you're on the hook for, on your balance sheet, in your total liabilities and equities, you've got $50 million represented there, but you got only $44 million of it because you paid all that money to the investment bankers. And so that's their money. They can do whatever they want with it. You're obligated to perform on $50 million even though you have $44 million to do it with. So that float does impact the company as well. That's why selling common stock seems like a pretty not very good idea, because it is very expensive. As a matter of fact, if you do some of the numbers, almost always the cost of new equity, in other words, if you want to raise money through new stock offering, that's the most expensive money you can get. The next most expensive money is your existing shareholders. And then after that is your debt holders. And oddly enough, right about the same place, if not even a little bit lower, are your preferred shareholders. They're actually a very cheap thing. I mean, most preferred shareholders are old. They're not going to, you don't have to do all kinds of dancing and fussing. You just pay them the same amount forever. Every year, just send them their stupid little dividend. It doesn't grow. You just have to pay it. So actually, oddly enough, and this increases the mystery, and I mentioned this before, why don't companies issue preferred stock that much anymore? You see real estate companies do it a lot, but it's really totally unpopular otherwise. And that's kind of a mystery. Well, maybe not. Maybe not. Issuing preferred stock is one of those things that it's not exciting. You can't drum up a big media hype for issuing preferred stock like you can for equity. I mean, you can sucker people with a new stock offering. It happens all the time. Facebook was just a big, big hype by the suckers in the media and those who were actually being paid behind the scenes. Other ones, Lyft was a big suckers game. Uber is laughable. How a company that has already said we probably will never make a profit could have a price like they have. Similarly, Tesla, how its price can stay up there in the air the way it is. But anyway, okay, now, one last one, the cost of preferred. Cost of preferred. That's another kind of equity. Preferred. All I do is I take the price now of preferred stock is the flat dividend that's going to be paid forever divided by the discount rate on preferred stock. Rearrange that stupid thing and you get the price of the cost of preferred is the flat dividend that'll be paid forever divided by its current price.
That's all there is to it. Now, if it's new, you'd have to do P0 minus the float on preferred. As I said, the float on preferred is very low historically, which means that it's almost like we usually just ignore the difference between existing and new preferred. I mean, technically, if it's new, you do D over P0, the price of the preferred, minus the float on the preferred. But the float on preferred is, like I said, I mean, it just is really negligible. Now, I didn't do any homework problems that included a distinction between existing and new preferred. I suspect that the Cengage Autobot might have put one or two in there, but I don't know. It's nothing hard, though. Whenever you're doing a new, you just take the price minus the float cost. So the price is $20 for the stock right now, and the float is 5%. You just take $20 minus 5% of $20, which is a dollar. So you just divide by 19 instead of 20. Now, I'll go through a whole bunch of problems on this. Just work on problems, show you how it works, and I'll apply it to a couple of companies to see what their weighted average cost of capital is right now. And I'll do that on Thursday. Right now, I'm going to give you a quiz. And then we'll move on from there. When you're finished with the quiz, that's all I have for you. I thank you.